Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. With frightening stakes out there for the U.S. economy, the U.S. Treasury and Federal Reserve are stepping in with a plan to rescue Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the backers of nearly half of American mortgage debt. This is about as big as it gets when it comes to economic interventions, and all of us are in on it as taxpayers left holding the bag. You can now officially tell your grandchildren you've lived through a time of economic crisis. World financial markets are holding their breath. Let's hope it doesn't get worse. This hour on Point, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the U.S. economy in the balance. Joining me now from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is James Bob Haggerty, reporter for the Wall Street Journal. He's been co-writing the lead articles on the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac situation for the Journal. Bob Haggerty, welcome back to On Point. Good to have you.
Hi there. Thank you.
Give us a sense of the scale of the stakes here. We saw these companies' stocks just spiraling down last week, and the whole world is watching. What was the Treasury Department looking at over the weekend when they considered whether or not to get involved here, Bob?
Well, I think there's a realization that this country is very, very reliant on Fannie and Freddie to provide funding for home mortgages. They own or guarantee more than half of the mortgages outstanding in this country, and right now they are responsible really for backing even a larger percentage than that because so many other suppliers of capital have backed away from the housing market.
So we're talking trillions, $5 trillion or more.
That's right.
What was the fear that led the Treasury Department and the Fed with them to act?
The fear was that people who buy the bonds issued by Fannie and Freddie would get nervous. And if they stopped buying those bonds, that would raise the cost of credit for all Americans. The stock market investors have already gone into panic mode, and that's not such a big problem except for them. But if the people who provide the credit finance for these companies backed away, then it would be a huge problem.
And there was and is an auction scheduled for today on that front. They were afraid, what, that people wouldn't step up, they wouldn't want their debt, and the credit crunch would go into a deep freeze.
That's true, yeah. That auction was this morning. It seems to be going well because the federal government has now very strongly affirmed its willingness to open up the checkbook if ever needed. And I think that has reassured the investors.
What exactly has been proposed here by Treasury and the Fed? What are they going to do right away? What do they need from Congress now to make it a reality?
Well, one thing that they can make a reality right away is that the Fed has opened up a possibility for Fannie and Freddie to borrow from the Federal Reserve directly if need be. That doesn't require any congressional action. In addition, the Treasury wants to make available its own possibility to lend money to them, and that does require some congressional approval to expand that authority. The Treasury also wants from Congress the authority to buy stock in Fannie and Freddie if need be.
To support their stock price, is that really the responsibility of the federal government?
It wouldn't be so much to support the stock price. It would be if they run out of capital and nobody else wants to supply them that capital, the Treasury could buy stock in the companies.
Fannie Mae, the Federal National Mortgage Association, goes all the way back to the 1930s. It was supposed to back up banks, buy mortgages from them as they made them so that could free up cash to make more mortgages. So it was in this quasi sort of government-sponsored enterprise status. What's the quick and dirty, Bob, on how these two got in this situation? What happened to the overseers? Is this too much oversight, too little oversight, too much government backing, I should say, or too little attention paid?
Yeah. Well, Fannie Mae, when it was created, was a government agency. It was, in 1968, turned into a private company, but it still had very close links with the government and special privileges, and so that made investors feel that if there was ever, the government would have to stand behind Fannie and Freddie, which were created in 1970. That meant that they could borrow money quite cheaply, and they could afford to buy a lot of mortgages, guaranteed mortgages. What happened, I think, is that they were never required to hold a lot of capital, because there was always the assumption that homeowners will almost always pay their mortgages. They'll do anything to avoid losing their homes. And so the losses on mortgages would always be quite low. But now we see in the current environment, with house prices falling very fast in parts of the country, that some people will just walk away from their mortgages. They will not be able to pay.
And with that, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in deep trouble. A line thrown out today, Congress to act later, the auction today so far going well. Maybe the bullet dodged for the moment, but this whole global economic story, not over yet. James Bob Haggerty has covered it all for the Wall Street Journal. Bob, thanks very much for joining us today.
All right, thank you.
Joining me now from New York is Robin Farzad, Wall Street editor for Business Week magazine. He's been closely watching the mortgage crisis and the Fannie-Freddie situation. Robin Farzad, thanks very much for being with us. Welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Stowe, Vermont, is Paul Willen, senior economist and policy advisor at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. He's been a fellow at the National Bureau of Economic Research. He's taught at Princeton, MIT, University of Chicago. He speaks with us today in his capacity as an economist and researcher, not for the Federal Reserve itself. Paul Willen, welcome to you.
Hi, Tom.
Robin, first to you. Has this done it? Has this stopped it? Is this staunched the crisis that appeared to be blowing up as late as Friday afternoon, or do we not know yet?
We don't know yet. And the scary thing is that it's a stare down, really, between Hank Paulson at the Treasury, Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve, and everybody else that really gives no benefit of the doubt right now to anything mortgage related. You know, there was a crisis of confidence in the past few weeks in seeing Fannie and Freddie shares cut in half. There's really no new news, but the anticipation that they would have to sell a ton of stock and dilute shareholders just to make ends meet, and really investors pressing that implicit guarantee that the government always, I think, kept deliberately implicit to really test the government's mettle and see what happened in a worst-case scenario. Would the Treasury Department step forward, make an iconic speech on the steps of the Treasury Department? Would this cause some sort of weekend emergency action to happen? And I think that betrays the fact that this was a failure of imagination to really imagine the worst-case scenario. And we're not necessarily at the worst-case scenario.
Paul, at this point, though, Americans, at least to some extent, are already in line to be left holding the bag here. We're told maybe $300 billion out of the gate. And who knows if things get worse. Of course, if the market turns up, everything could just be roses before you know it. But give us a sense of the stakes here, given that everybody's kind of on the hook for whatever the federal government does. What are the stakes that have led Hank Paulson and Ben Bernanke to take such a dramatic step in the last 24 hours?
Well, depends on what you mean. What's gotten us here is a collapse in house prices. I think that's one of the things that we've lost sight of. There's been a lot of focus in the last year on the mortgages, on all kinds of crazy lending, on reduced documentation loans, and all kinds of things like that. But what we really have here is a house price a crisis. And so Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they do most of their business lending using houses as collateral. And they take on the credit risk. They're the ones who, if these loans, if borrowers default, the investors in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac securities are in theory not vulnerable. The vulnerability is entirely on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
So the housing Mac is front and, housing market front and center as a problem and maybe at risk here. But right behind it would seem to me, I mean, you've got buyers from all around the world of these securities. You've got a credit crunch well advanced already. It seems to me they acted because they're afraid that the whole global economy could freeze up on the back of
that,
the problem.
You also have to remember, I mean, I think this is the thing we saw with Bear Stearns. It's not just the bonds. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are involved in trillions of transactions every day with all kinds of different people, derivatives, all kinds of things. I think this is the same thing we saw with Bear Stearns. A problem with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac extends beyond just the bondholders. It's anybody who's doing business with them. And I think the problem here, as it was with Bear Stearns, is the minute people worry about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's ability to raise money in capital markets, they're unwilling to do any business with them. And that's where the problem starts, is once you have a crisis of confidence about a financial institution, it extends to everything. And as you just said, there are investors in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac securities all over the place. In a lot of ways, their securities were treated as close to the equivalent of government debt. So people always treated this as a very safe asset. That was something you could trust for widows and orphans. So we have this security all over the place. It's not just investors using it as an investment. It's collateral for all kinds of loans. So there are people who, it's not just that the securities are held in someone's books. They're being used. There are lots of people who may not hold Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac securities on their books, but they have a loan to someone who used Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac securities as collateral.
Robin, what's the canyon we're tiptoeing along the edge of here?
You know, let's cut to the chase here. Why, pray tell, were they allowed to become so big and interconnected to begin with? I mean, it just blows my mind that regulators step back at this, you know, terrible precipice and say, I'm just shocked. I'm shocked that this is happening. Well, it was a slow motion car wreck. We knew that home prices wouldn't go up forever. We knew that Fannie and Freddie were ultimately on the hook and that, you know, that the value of the mortgages that they had a hand in are almost at $5.5 trillion. That's something that any sort of implicit or explicit government guarantee cannot get its mind around. So why is it that, you know, we're saying that, you know, we're seeming to intimate here that no one ever modeled for the fact that home prices wouldn't go up ad infinitum? This is clearly something that regulators had ample opportunity to intervene and prevent.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the dramatic federal move to rescue Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the $5 trillion pillars of the U.S. mortgage market, and what it means for our economy and for you, the taxpayer, the one holding the bag here. Robin Farzad is with us, Wall Street editor and columnist for Business Week magazine. Also, Paul Willen, senior economist and policy advisor, the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, speaking today in a private capacity as an economist. Paul Willen, already, you know, the column's full of this debate about whether the root cause of this is the fact that there was an implicit guarantee by the government to back them up, so ordinary market forces were not at work in restraining what they did, or we have a failure of oversight and regulation here. How do you see it, Paul?
Well, I mean, I think those are two alternative ways of keeping keeping something in line. I mean, remember with the savings and loan crisis, we had a similar problem in the sense that normally we expect depositors to care whether what a lender, so in the case of the savings and loan crisis, who the lender is lending to.
Yep.
But once you had government insurance, then depositors don't care because they know they'll get their money back. And we have a similar situation here a little in that and then you need a regulator who is very careful, and that's something we learned at great cost, and so we have a similar situation here, and it's exactly right. I mean, we need good regulators, and I think that over the years, I mean, there was an effort to try and to increase the regulatory oversight of the GSEs, but at the same time,
that's the government sponsored enterprises like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Yeah,
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Right. There was an effort. At the same time, they provide financing for homeowners. So there's also a lot of pressure since everybody, you know, 60-70% of Americans are homeowners. There's a big constituency out there for making it easier for people to borrow and making it easier for people to buy homes. So there was a tension there. I mean, there's a tension if you have the government both as a role as regulator protecting investors and depositors, and then you also have the role of the government as trying to maintain homeownership.
Robin, how do you see it? I mean, do we have a short circuit of market discipline, market dynamics here, or slipshod regulation?
All of the above, I contest. And I contend. And also, you know, on homeownership specifically, I think that's an important point to flesh out. This is more, at the risk of sounding sacrilegious, it's become a fetish in this country since the Great Depression to protect and promote homeownership at any cost. But look, we saw the American dream, the young couple saving, you know, to put down that 30%, 25% down. That whole ideal really metastasized into the speculative froth of the early part of the decade and home ownership for home ownership's sakes and flippers. And look, I'm from Miami, Florida. That's condo flipper central. That had nothing to do with the American dream. It was speculation pure and simple. And I think that these two issues got tied up. And meanwhile, you have the government not wanting to take away that punch bowl while it happened. I mean, people knew all about these adjustable rate mortgage abuses. They knew all about shoddy lending, the Alt-A mortgages. Look at what with, you know, IndyMac Bank failing. Countrywide would have failed had Bank of America not stepped forth to take it out. So this confluence of issues really in that one proper ideal in this country becomes entangled and mixed up inextricably with speculation and adjustable rate froth. I think now we find that it's pretty impossible to separate these two easily because regulators have blunt instruments at their disposal. They can hike interest rates to choke the whole system. They can lower interest rates, but then that wreaks havoc on the dollar. They can come out and save two institutions really that are looked at as sacred, and the government is not about to let them fail because it's going to cause the entire housing system proper and speculative to crash on its face. And again, this comes back to a failure of regulation. People should have had the chutzpah, should have had the courage of their convictions. Regulators, congressmen, I mean, you talk about Chuck Schumer casting aspersions on IndyMac. Why wasn't he doing this 3-4 years ago when it was decidedly unpopular to say anything about the housing boom? That's my question.
And now we're talking billions and maybe trillions on the taxpayer hook, and it's not over yet. Let's listen to our listeners in Erie, Pennsylvania. Bob is calling. Bob, you're on the air.
I just wanted to make a comment regarding this mortgage mess and this Freddie Mac and Fannie Mac situation that we're in. And basically my comment is, and I don't know why the American public just continues to stand for this kind of nonsense happening, because our Congress people are in Washington, the Senate, and the House, they would continue to pass these laws that allow IndyMac Bank, the Bear Stearns, to do the things that they're doing. I mean, the credit card situation where companies can raise your interest rates that you're paying if you're late on paying your electric bill. These companies aren't doing this thing just because they want to do it. They're doing it because Congress has written laws that allow them to do it. And then we seem shocked when these things happen. We've allowed the guys on Wall Street to package all kinds of nonsense to pass it on, to sell it, to resell it. And we're shocked when we get this situation that we have today. It's happening because Congress has allowed these money people to do whatever they want to without any kind of oversight, and then we're amazed and shocked when these kind of things happen.
And the bill may come back to you, to all of us. Bob, thanks very much for that. Paul Willen, how about it? I mean, Gretchen Morgenson writing the Time yesterday saying, you know, this wasn't the way the ownership society was supposed to work. She said, it's dispiriting to watch the United States financial system, supposedly the envy of the world, being taken to its knees. But that's the show we're watching. And our caller, Bob in Erie, says, why? Why was this much, faith given to people and dynamics that patently didn't work out here?
There are two separate things to say. One of them is about this is that there were parts of this that were not regulated, and in a sense that was deliberate. There was a sense, there was until very recently a good side to this crisis. Unlike the savings and loan crisis, where taxpayers were on the hook from the word go, here we have had enormous losses, and until fairly recently, it had not resulted in any bank failures, and it had not resulted in any government. In any government money being spent to bail anyone out. And the reason was that what we had done was, because of the experience of the savings and loans, partly, we created this, or Wall Street created this mortgage lending system where investors lent money, investors bought securities, those securities were used to finance mortgages, and there were no depositors involved. So the investors who bought these securities understood there was a chance they would lose their money, unlike depositors in a bank who believe that they'll definitely get their money back.
And but we were supposed to be so great at risk management, and now it's taxpayers who may hold the bag for all this.
We've come to that point, and I think the thing is, up to this point, the system worked, I mean, in its crazy way, was working right. I mean, the people who were losing money were the people who were supposed to be losing money. Merrill Lynch, hedge funds, people all over the world were losing money, but not depositors and not the taxpayers.
But can you say the system was working right if the story ends this way?
Right. I think up until this point, the system, that part of it was working the way it was supposed to. I think we've reached a point where basically the taxpayer is on the hook. But the point is here is that when the taxpayer is on the hook, then the government does have an obligation and a need to heavily regulate. And it's true now that banks that take one of the reasons why depositor finance institutions have, for the most part, avoided this crisis is because they're much more carefully regulated. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were somehow this neither fish nor fowl. They were somewhere in between, so they sort of were supposedly disciplined by the market, but then also sort of guaranteed by the government. And that ambiguity allowed them to both behave like Wall Street, but then also to have for investors to view them like banks, and that's where the problem is, at least with them.
That ambiguity played to a fairly well, and of course their executives went away with tens of millions in the last decade and more. Let's go to Marissa in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Marissa, you're on the air.
My name is Marissa, and I'm calling from Jamaica Plain. I'm a senior counsel with the Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America, NACA. And our position as one of the most effective housing organizations in the country is that this is another bailout of Wall Street. We should not be separating these two institutions just because they are quasi-governmental. In reality, all they are doing is that they have become part of the problem. They have become part of the scam because they not only bought these products, they knowingly bought these products. We testify, our CEO, Bruce Marks, testified in Congress many years ago about the problem in the structural problem of this product.
Which and products? You're saying they were buying subprime mortgages? They were part of the subprime mess?
Yes, they were. And they just became a facilitator for these products. They bought up to 40% of countrywide products, and they knowingly did it. And then on top of that, for some of your commentators to be saying that this is not a problem for the taxpayers, the taxpayers, as homeowners, which were always forgotten in this picture, have left a lot of money. A lot of their wealth has been gone in these foreclosures.
Yeah, but let me ask you, Marissa, I would bet anything that your organization was one of those pushing for much more home lending in neighborhoods where the foreclosure rate is now so high. I mean, weren't you, in fact, pushing the lenders to do exactly what got them into so much trouble?
Never predatory lending, never subprime lending. We lend in those communities, and we lend the right way. We counsel people to products that are as good as the A products. The subprime product is not the way to lend. People that don't have money should not be paying 11% interest rate and paying fees up front.
Marissa, let me put it to my guest, Robin Farzad. What about it? Have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they're not supposed to do, lousy lending, subprime lending, liar's loans. Did they get into backing predatory lending as part of their portfolio?
Well, look, they have a blanket mandate to go in there and buy, hold, securitize all manner of mortgages. And as
all
we
manner,
know now,
including mortgages that wouldn't pass anybody's smell test?
Well, what we know now is that certain ones that appeared to be kosher on the surface weren't, right? This is all coming out in the postmortem, the autopsy of the past 12 months is when things that we thought had a value, even institutional investors were hoodwinked because things fell apart and assumptions fall apart. And these things happen every 20 or 30 so years. You saw it with the SNL crisis. People were shocked. Regulators didn't realize that all this just happened under the radar for 8 or 9 years. And then regulation followed, of course, slamming the barn door, not only when the horse was miles away, but the horse was buried and dead. And so much of that is going to happen now. But look, the problem here, and I think this goes back to something Marissa said, is so many people supported the entire mortgage-making infrastructure writ large. This is something that has unanimity on Capitol Hill. You don't cast aspersions on the American dream. Whether you're Charlie Rangel or the most hardened supply-sider, you like the mandate of Fannie and Freddie. They make the American dream more accessible. And, of course, the executives of Fannie and Freddie, who are not, by no means are they choir boys, they realize that there's a regulatory arbitrage here. They're at that ambiguous nexus of private private profit and public sector assumption of risk. And so they take advantage of that. And if that window is open for so long and you have Congress egging them on and you have the institutions constantly demanding, we want to make more mortgages, please buy our old mortgages off of us. And you have institutional investors from here to Korea to Japan to Italy wanting to buy their debt securities, well, why not?
But if that American dream just becomes a kind of a cover for all kinds of shenanigans and eating away at the foundation of these institutions that are supposed to be, you know, rock solid and backing this all up, that doesn't look too good. Let's take a call from Fairfield, Iowa. And Alan, you're on the air, Alan.
Hello, Tom. I'd like to point out that the press, including shows like yours, have been woefully silent on a very obvious problem with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac for years. If you take a look at the budget documents for the last several years, they have had a very small little graph of four cells, which were supposed to show the assets of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they were blank.
Blank. No.
It was a blank. It was as it was alleged. You know, the little asterisk that said that it was because there was accounting changes from previous years. But the clear implication when you have that going several years in a row is that those institutions, very much like the savings and loans, were hollowed out by theft.
But, Alan, I've seen stories, and, you know, forgive us if we didn't hound on it enough right here, but I've seen stories all over page one of the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere over recent years saying problems here at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We read now over the weekend about all the super lobbying going on there to keep everybody off their backs. Why do you think more wasn't done earlier, Alan? Was it to protect the American dream of home ownership?
In the sense that the Americans have been very much like the customers in a bank that's being held up, by somebody who's just kind of walked up to the teller window and said, hey, you know, hand me the money.
Who's the thief? Who's the robber here?
The American people have not been told that that theft on a huge level has been going on at the FHA, the Federal Housing Administration, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. I mean, the United States government has been functioning practically as a giant criminal organization.
Well, who's Bonnie and Clyde in that picture?
Ida Steele.
Okay. Alan, thanks for your call. Paul, I mean, is it criminal negligence here?
Well, let me say that there have been a lot of people saying for years that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were a big problem.
Yes, indeed.
And that we needed to do something about it. I think one of the things, the discussion about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac ever getting into serious trouble like we've had in the last week was always considered something, let's imagine some day way in the future, the way we talk about a natural disaster or something. You know,
mm-hmm.
Yes,
the 100-year flood, and here it is.
Pardon?
The 100-year flood. And
exactly,
then
the 100-year flood. It was always viewed as something that we might someday need to worry about. And there have been people hammering away at this, lots of people saying these organizations were, you know, could turn into a huge problem. There have been people saying this over and over and over again. As you said, they have a very slick lobbying operation that has also managed to convince a lot of people in Congress that they were essential and not to worry about this. And let me just say, I mean, Congress in the stimulus package, whatever it was, just a few months ago, expanded the scope of their activities. And Barney Frank viewed them in his legislation as part of the solution to the problem right now, and that we needed to encourage organizations like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So I think to say that there hasn't been a debate about this, there has, and it has not fallen down along the normal lines you would. It's not that the people who are in favor of regulation have been in favor of more regulation of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It's been very hard to...
Yeah, Paul, hold the thought there. A lot of debate, but not intervention until now. And now it could be very costly. Listeners, we're looking at that big rescue. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about the dramatic federal move to rescue Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the $5 trillion pillars of the U.S. mortgage market, and what that means for our economy and for you, the taxpayer, the one holding the bag here. We've been joined by Robin Farzad, Wall Street editor and columnist for Business Week magazine, Paul Willen, senior economist and policy advisor at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. In just a moment, Robert Samuelson joins us, but let's listen for a second to Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson yesterday saying the consequences of the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac situation go far beyond U.S. borders, saying he wants to return these two GSEs, or government-sponsored enterprises, to good financial standing.
GSE debt is held by financial institutions around the world. Its continued strength is important to maintaining confidence and stability in our financial system and our financial markets. Therefore, we must take steps to address the current situation as we move to a stronger regulatory structure.
As we move to a stronger regulatory structure, Robert Samuelson joins us now from Bethesda, Maryland, columnist for Newsweek and The Washington Post. Bob Samuelson, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Do you agree that we are now, will now move to a stronger regulatory structure? And if we're going to do that now, why not a couple of years ago when it might have headed this off?
Well, I think we probably will move to something stronger. There's legislation as part of the housing legislation that's now pending before Congress would increase the regulatory oversight. But the problem really is not the fundamental problem is not the regulation. It is the climate in which the regulation exists. And the reason we haven't had tougher regulation in the past of this is, as I think your other guests have indicated, that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are really part of a kind of overall policy to promote home ownership in the United States. And as a part of that, we've cut corners. We've made it easier for people to borrow. We've subsidized mortgage rates. We've given mortgage homeowners a tax deduction for mortgage interest. So there's a whole series of policies that is intended to promote home ownership, and I think we are now reaching the point where we've gone too far with these policies, and we are discovering that we have created losses.
But home ownership has been a goal and a target in this country for a long time. Fannie Mae, of course, goes all the way back to the 1930s. I mean, is this really about the sanctity of home ownership and motherhood and apple pie? Or is it about, along with Countrywide and the rest, a picture in which reasonable regulation was allowed to fall away, and underneath that, you know, who can gripe about it? Umbrella, we had a kind of a festival of thieves festival going on.
I don't think we had a festival of thieves so much. We had a climate in which things that were thought to be desirable, that is, promoting home ownership, basically justified, rationalized, and promoted practices that we, with hindsight, now discover were sloppy, and in some cases criminal, but mainly just sloppy.
But liar loans, subprime lending writ large, you know, the kind of bad accounting for risk that went on here, those things don't seem necessary.
Well, there's no doubt that some criminality occurred here, and some stupidity occurred here. But you have to remember that this was all part of a much larger things go to excess, and the policies to promote home ownership really went to excess. And then the housing bill that is now before Congress essentially extends these policies. It has very low requirements for down payments for government guaranteed loans. Home loans. It tries to bail out, I think, roughly 400,000 existing homeowners. And as one of your previous guests pointed out, earlier this year, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's authority was actually expanded into loans that are, by their nature, riskier. And so this is all part of a piece. And when we go back and look at this, undoubtedly we're going to find lots of examples, and as we already have in the subprime area, of stupidity and criminality. But I don't. People will fix on the trees, and they will lose sight of the forest.
The forest is though we want to get to here. I mean, you say it's part of a much larger picture, and I assume that at some point, what American voters are going to be asked to decide on is whether or not they want more regulation in Washington. For a decade and more now, you know, everything's been against regulation. I mean, is this, you know, behind the American dream of home ownership? Is this about whether that bigger picture was one where a kind of cowboy ethic took over and pushed risk, which now lands on the taxpayer, out into areas where it should never have been, Bob?
Well, that's clearly what's happened. But to just ascribe all this to a kind of free market mania, it seems to me, loses sight of the political climate in which the sort of the free market mania occurred. FHA, there was no particular reason that Fannie Mae had and Freddie Mac had to set low down payment requirements for the loans that they extended and guaranteed. They could have set 10%. That strikes me as a kind of reasonable down payment mm-hmm. that anybody ought to have to make on a new home. But many loans were made with lower down payments than that, and that was a part of a regulatory superstructure, and it was blessed politically. People don't want to understand here that there are conflicts between some of the goals that we want. We want solvent institutions that make prudent loans, and yet at the same time we want to have expanded home ownership. Well, there's a conflict there. If you want to have prudent lending, to some extent you have to be able to say no to some people who want to become homeowners.
But isn't that what we count on, regulators and sober lenders, to strike the right balance, not lead the whole system down a garden path? I mean, isn't that a reasonable thing, even with that desire of wide home ownership?
You say people are always wise in retrospect. And the regulators here were no more well-informed, in general, were no more well-informed than the people were in the marketplace. There was an assumption, wrong in retrospect, that housing prices would go up forever, and they would never go down. If you bought into that assumption, you could make all kinds of stupid loans because the loans would be made against assets that would always be rising in price, and therefore that even if the people couldn't pay the loans, you could sell the asset and recover the money. But it turned out that the assumption was wrong. It was self-serving.
Robin, Paul, I want to get you on this, but let's go first to Roy in Iowa City. Hi, Roy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a big question. I guess I'm wondering, you know, with the federal government getting involved in Freddie and Fannie, what is a likely result? Does the dollar get weaker? Do mortgage rates rise in the long term? And, you know, your guest Samuelson, I echo everything. I'm in the real estate business, and anybody who didn't see this coming 5 years ago just didn't have their eyes open.
What do you do in the real estate business, Roy?
I'm an appraiser.
You're an appraiser. So
Yeah. You're
in Iowa City, you're an appraiser, and you say 5 years ago you could see it coming. But doesn't that mean that people watching these markets and regulating these markets ought to have seen it coming as well?
Well, you know, you'd think so, but the problem is when everybody in the business is making money, and it always seemed to me that there was so much money coming in, you know, it's just a demand and supply problem. When you have investors looking to put their money someplace, lending guidelines get relaxed. They start giving loans to people who can't make payments, or they give them arms where they can make the payment when the interest rate is artificially low and can't make the payments later on. And nobody's mind in the store. I mean, you know, I certainly had some clients who were basically doing lots of no-doc loans. It was pretty common in the business. And, you know these people are lying when they state what their income is. And, of course, when they finally go belly up, when rates go up,
yep.
You know, why anybody is shocked that any of this is happening, it's just baffling.
But isn't that precisely the moment at which that you count on oversight? Paul Willen, let's go to Roy's questions. First on the dollar and then on mortgage rates. What kind of impact do you see from this intervention, federal government intervention?
I'm going to call in my disclaimer here. The dollar is not something I'm going to comment on right now.
Because of your Federal Reserve Bank position.
Yes, as an employee of the Federal Reserve.
You can't get that hat far enough off to comment on that. Okay.
I don't want to cause.
I suppose mortgage rates is the same problem. Of course, we'd like to have you on them, but you're begging off there too.
No. On the mortgage rates. I mean, let me say. I mean, this is. I'm not making any forecasts here. One of the things we saw last summer, I don't know, the spread between so-called conforming loans, which are loans that can be sold to the GSEs, to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and loans, so jumbo loans, which are loans that can't.
Yep.
One of the things we saw last August in the sort of spectacular thing in the crisis was the spread on that went from a quarter of a point to so 25 hundredths of a point to 125, mm-hmm. More or less overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the problems there was for those people who were concerned about the GSEs was it looked like there were all these problems out there, but fortunately we had the GSEs here to cover most of the mortgage market, and that meant for most borrowers the credit crunch wasn't a problem. It was only for borrowers whose loans didn't conform to the GSE rules.
Well, they're still there. Now the federal government's behind them. How does that change the picture?
That gets back to one of the reasons why this intervention is happening. Again, I'm just saying that as a citizen, not as as anyone connected with the Federal Reserve. So the problem now is that if people are nervous about all of this debt, then that's going to make borrowing harder for everyone. And that's not, I'm not forecasting the rates are going to go up. I'm just saying that does present a problem. So this is definitely an issue. And it may not manifest itself. It may manifest itself at least partly in the form of loans being the interest rates going up, or it could also manifest itself in the fact that loans that, even for highly creditworthy borrowers, loans that used to be very easy to get and would seem to any of us like perfectly reasonable loans. I've had friends who have gotten applications for second mortgages denied.
Mm-hmm.
That shouldn't be an issue. That's going to be an issue.
But it is right now. Robin Farzad, our Fed friend, is walking carefully here. How do you see the
dollar? I'll talk as a citizen and a journalist and a civilian, whatever you want me to riff on. Look, check this out. There is an element here which is ultimately, I think, the most offensive part of this is that there's an element of collective punishment. You know, back to freshman year in the dorm room, if somebody came out in a drunken stupor Saturday night and blew out the lights in the hallway and didn't step forth to fess up by Sunday or Monday morning, everybody in our dorm had to pay for it. And in many ways, the entire U.S. and global economy is paying for this. Look, if the Federal Reserve comes out and has to slash interest rates again on an emergency basis, we know now that that's inextricably linked to the weakness in the dollar, which is then connected to this meteoric rise in the price of oil, which is already like a tax on Americans. And look at what happened to IndyMac Bank. I mean, this is one bank failure. It's the largest since the S&L crisis. And there were people there who were saving, who were ostensibly on their best behavior for the past, you know, 10 years, didn't partake in the internet boom, didn't heed the siren call of subprime adjustable rate mortgages to go in there, and they took a haircut on their savings because they didn't mind the fact that they were over the $100,000 or $200,000 joint FDIC limit. So that's what I think is offensive here, is that everybody has to hold the bucket. And the whole time you have people who are saying that interest rates have been held artificially low for the better part of this decade. That has punished savers. And that, you know, really took from a whole constituency to give to another constituency, all in the name of home ownership, you know, overrated or not. So that's what's frustrating here. And if you counterfactualize it, if the government does have to ultimately step in and take an equity stake in the GSEs,
Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac,
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and add to their equity capital, which has been depleted, we've seen in the market the past 2 weeks. Does it work if the tables turn, if we counterfactualize this? If Fannie and Freddie roar back in the next 7 years, does the government suddenly have a windfall that it then gives back to the taxpayer on a prorated basis? This is what's ultimately frustrating about this and precisely why you see regulators leave it deliberately vague.
Let me get one more call, then I'll come to you, Bob Samuelson. Steve in Boston, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question, let me just situate it in a brief analogy. When I was just got my license, I got in a car accident, and I basically argued to my parents that it was because my tires are bald. They said I was going too fast. Now, the question I have is, with 80% or 85% of the wealth in the United States only going to 20, meaning that the other 80% only has 15% of the money, to what extent is it that the middle class and the lower class just don't have the money to buy a house you need to buy? And that being said, you know, how much is regulatory policies and legislative policies kind of like me arguing that it's the tread of the wheels when really, you know, the car is going too fast? And
you're saying
really,
bad distribution,
you know,
maybe. Our time is short. Let's go to Robert Samuelson. Bob, there's a great big one throwing the doors wide open for you as we close here. But what about big picture? You hear Steve's question.
Well, the problem we are fundamental problem in the housing market we're facing is we had a bubble. In other words, prices got too high. They became unaffordable for lots of potential homeowners. The only way to solve, there are only two ways of solving that problem. One is you can give people more money, make credit easier, which is what we did for a while, and then the bubble got worse, or you can let prices go down. Now, Congress, in its consideration of what it wants to do with housing, wants to have both things happen at the same time. It wants to prop up housing prices because that's everybody's largest investment, and people don't want to see their home prices come down. On the other hand, it wants to make housing affordable for more people. Well, you cannot do both of these at the same time unless you liberalize credit and make credit too easy. And I think that the significance of the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac problems are this dilemma has now been brought to a head. It's becoming increasingly obvious, and Congress is going to have to try to choose, and the administration is going to have to try to choose one or the other. I think that that's the issue that's coming up. And going back to the analogy of your caller and driving, you know, I think that Congress ultimately is just going to have to slow down here.
They're
going to have to let the prices, housing prices, go down, and they're going to have to stop validating policies that basically result in easy credit.
Well, sounds like a bend in the road there. Let's hope we make it. Robert Samuelson at Newsweek and the Washington Post, thanks very much for being with us today, Bob.
Thank you, Tom.
Paul Willen with the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston talking with us today as a private economist. Paul, thank you very much for joining us.
Welcome.
And Robin Farzad at Businessweek Magazine. Always good to have you, Robin.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.